It is 88.5 KCSN. And let's see, you're on mic two, you being Chris Isaac. Is that you, Chris?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Hey.
See how they're respond.
Sky, professional entertainment.
It's just, you know what helped me, Chris? Do you see the lights? If it had not been for the red light, I would have figured that out. But then I figured it out once I saw the red light.
There you go.
So we're good. Now, let's talk about the new record, First Comes the Night.
Mm-hmm.
How many albums now?
I think this is 13. Lucky 13.
13.
Yeah.
I have, much like
I got to work harder.
Yeah, they have like 17 studio albums.
And you know, I think, how many did Bowie have? I just heard that, you know, Bowie had, I mean, it was like, I was shocked at how many he had.
I think it was 30.
Yeah, I mean, like he had some crazy amount of records. Yeah. I go, I got to get up. I got to turn off the TV.
And remember, he quit making records for about 10 years.
Yeah, I know. I never stop. I'm always working. I don't know what the deal. He writes faster.
Well, you know, listen.
He's got a ballpoint pen.
You know, you boxed earlier in your life, and, you know, that has to account for
something. Took it out of me.
Yeah. Do you have CTE? Do you know? I don't mean to joke.
You know something? I think about it now, and I'm glad that when I boxed, I had a boxing coach who always told me, you don't have to go in and slug. You're tall, and you can win on points. And that was always my thing. I was tall, and I had a good jab. So I wasn't somebody who stood there toe-to-toe and slugged with people. And I'm glad now that I didn't. You know, I mean, I have a few. My nose has been broken 7 times. I got a few scars over my eyes. But I go, I never really wanted to be, like, in a slugfest with anybody. And then as soon as I stopped boxing, I mean, you couldn't get me in a boxing gym if you know, not for money or love would I go there.
Do you enjoy the sweet science?
You know something, now that I know that people can get hurt by football or boxing, something like that, if I had a kid, and I'm the most old school American style, you know, football's good for the kids. Let him walk it off if he broke his leg, you know. That's the best thing for him, you know. Bactine, that'll cure your broken leg, son. Come on, walk it off. The reality of it is, now I was just talking to my friends. I said, if I had a kid, I don't, but if I had a kid, I don't think I'd let him play football or box. It's like, play tennis. Do something you don't get hurt.
What about singing?
I'd love them to sing. I think singing is great. I've always said to people, if you don't, you know, singing is like, to me, is like sex. You don't have to be good at it to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, and it shouldn't.
Lucky you.
Yeah, it shouldn't. It's exactly, and it shouldn't disqualify you. You know, just because you may not be the best, you're not going to stop.
It hasn't stopped you.
I hear people all the time. Nobody ever sings to a singer. Like, I love to hear people sing, and I'll go up to somebody and I'll be singing something. I'll say, you know, sing along. They go, oh no, you're a professional singer. I go, who cares? We're not counting points. You know, I never hear anybody sing. Nobody wants to sing to you if you're a singer.
I'll sing the off mic, but
all right, honey.
I don't want to lose our whole audience.
Now we got something going.
I'm trying to remember back. I'm gonna remember. Probably 84. You played a joint in Oakland, and I was working at KFOG when we first came on the air, and it was a place in Oakland. And I remember walking in, it was the first time I saw you play live, and I said, this man is going to be a huge star, because 98% of the room, and I know because I took a survey of everyone in attendance, 98% of the room were professional models. And I thought, this is someone who I definitely want to follow the career of. When 98%, and that is a true statistical number, were actual models, I thought, this guy's got a nice following.
You know, one time I was talking to somebody in Metallica one time, and I said, you guys are so lucky. You know, you guys are tremendously successful, and you have the great music, and you play arenas and stuff. He goes, you're nuts. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, I play in an arena. He goes, I look out, and he goes, and everybody I see is 13-year-old boys watching my hands to see what I'm playing. He goes, I go to your shows. He goes, it's all models in the front 5 rows. I go, yeah, you got a point.
Hey, it's nice work if you can get it.
It's nice work.
So do you want to do a song live before I play stuff off the album?
Sure.
Well, you always have been fast on your feet.
Let's see. They say someday your heart might break. Loving you has been my big mistake. I knew it all, I wouldn't wait. Now how much longer must I wait? Don't break my heart, don't break my heart, don't make me go. Little darling, I'll always love you so. Don't leave me all alone, I'd be so blue. Little darling, don't you know there's only you? Let's start this love affair anew. Forget those troubles we've been through. You know I'm crazy over you. There's only one thing you can do. Don't break my heart, don't break my heart, don't make me go. Little darling, I'll always love you so. Don't leave me all alone, I'd be so blue. Little darling, don't you know there's only you? Little darling, don't you know there's only you? Oh, little darling, don't you know there's only you?
Chris Isaacs, live on 88.5 KCSN. Dapper as always. What color would you call that blue?
Sky blue.
Sky blue, bang.
You are
quick,
my friend. When I'm singing, it's fun to sing. I love singing. But I'm so used, after 30 years, I usually have Kenny Johnson, my drummer.
That's right.
And he and I are like Bing Crosby and Bob Hope.
You sure are.
Not in the talent, just that we're always together. And it's just so fun singing with him. I'll start songs that he doesn't even know. This is true. I can start a song, you know, and I'll start some crazy thing, and it's like, you know, oh, I'm behind the eight ball with my baby. She's the kind of girl who loves to party. And he just starts singing. And I go, I'm making that up. How are you singing along? He goes, I just watch your mouth and follow along. It's like 30 years, and he can just follow me instantly. And it's so fun singing with Kenny Johnson.
And I have to say, you know, in the times that you guys have been in the studio with us, you two are a Hope, you know, and Crosby comedy
funny.
Team. Well, the two of you, the timing is great.
Kenny is, in my life, it's funny because I spent, you know, Kenny got sick about, it's been about 2 years now. He fought off cancer, tried to come after him, and he whooped it.
Good.
And
God bless.
And scared the hell out of everybody, but, you know, happy ending. But I realized at one time I was thinking about it, and I thought, I spent more time with him than anybody in my life, more time than with my family or anyone, because for 30 years, we traveled together on a bus, on a stage, you know, doing promotion. And I know we can finish each other's sentences. I know every joke that he knows. I know every story that he can tell. You know what I mean? And he knows every one of mine. I said, one day, and we've never done it, but I keep threatening. I go, one day when they have phone interviews and I'm tired, I said, Kenny, you know every story I know. Just get on there and start talking. And I said, you can get by with it.
So, well, it's good to know. Next time I set up a phoner with you, I'll have to figure.
You go, Chris. This is the funniest you've ever been, and today you sound just brighter than ever.
And
you go, it's Kenny Johnson.
I'll end up saying, what color was that suit you wore that day the last time I saw you? And that's how I know I'll be able to trap him.
Bust him.
The new album, First Comes the Night. How do you approach an album at this point, having made 13 albums? Is there a catalyst for making a record for you, or is it something that you know the spirit just hits you and you feel like it's time?
I always want to pick what I think are melodies that stay in my head. So I'm giving you a really straight, maybe it's boring to some people, but maybe somebody out there is actually interested in a process of how you write songs and make records. My process is I start by, I'm sitting in my house at 2 in the morning, And you have to catch fish, you got to have a hook in the water. To write songs, you have to have a guitar in your hands or a piano, whatever you use. I get the guitar and I start playing. And then I put them down on, I tape record little bits and pieces until I have hundreds of bits and pieces. And then I take those hundreds of bits and pieces and I listen to them. And I write down the 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 that I go, that's got something different. Then I listen to those and I don't worry about the ones that I don't remember. If I don't remember it,
yep,
I don't want to work on that. And so I get down to a few pieces, and those are the ones I end up going after and working. And sometimes songs come really quick. You write them in 15 minutes. Wicked Game I wrote really quick.
Wow.
And other songs, you know, you get a verse, and then you got to climb Mount Rushmore to get that second verse. You know what I mean?
Well,
usually the third verse is the horrible one because you ran out all the good rhymes.
You know, now you're just working like, man, I need a third verse. I didn't have that good of an idea at 2 a.m.
If you came in my house and I'm writing songs, it looks like those like old Hawaii Five-O movies where they find the killer and he's got like millions of pieces of paper on the wall, you know, must get the girl, whatever. My house has got like...
Do you have the strings running to all
of them? I've got pieces of paper everywhere, pens everywhere. I've got those dry erase boards all over. And I'm usually walking around like Brian Wilson in a robe and my underwear with a guitar going, uh-huh.
I got one.
Moon. June. Soon. It's like you're going, just working on that last verse.
So you really do keep... You know, paper and or pen or some writing instrument within reach at all times.
I'm always amazed that some people go, oh, I just put everything on my computer and do it like that. And I go, mine's still, you know, about as modern as I get as a dry erase board so I can, you know, work like that.
But reuse the space.
Scraps of paper, backs of envelope, everything in my house is covered with stuff.
Have you ever started one and thought, man, I really got something here and lost it?
Yes, I lost a whole notebook of lyrics that I had. I had finished all the lyrics for the songs, and I had them on a notebook. And then I had to go do like a gig, and I came back after the weekend. And I thought I got all that done, and I couldn't find the notebook. And it bothers me even now thinking about it because I looked through that house. I mean, I tore it apart like. You know, like in a movie, it would be like the drug addict looking for his stash.
Or in my past life, thing.
You know, like, I know it's here somewhere, lost weekend, I'm looking for that bottle. I couldn't find it. About 7 years later, I moved out of that house, and I had a chest of drawers. And I thought, I'm going to drag this chest of drawers to the new house. And I thought, I'm not taking all these socks in the chest. It's too heavy. I took the socks. I'll take the T-shirts out. Took everything out. And I thought, I'll take the drawers out and I'll take it separately.
Oh.
Took the drawer out and behind the drawer, hanging on the back of the drawer because I had looked behind each drawer.
Which drawer was it? The sock drawer?
Yeah, it was behind like the sock drawer. So
underwear
it was hanging
drawer.
There. And I took it out and immediately sat down and compared the lyrics I had with the album. And I went, I improved it. Because I had to rewrite everything.
It was meant to be.
And it made one more pass. You know what I mean? It made one more pass that I had to go over it. So it worked out okay.
It was all right. Well, you mentioned Wicked Game, and just for a moment. Recently, one of the television phenomenons, Games of Thrones, had James Vincent McMorrow take Wicked Game and provide a treatment. I imagine you'll always appreciate whenever you get into a trailer of one of the, you know, pop phenomenons in terms of the television show and the capital gains that you may see from that. What did you think of James Vincent McMorrow's interpretation?
I thought it was great, and I think it was fantastic that they used it on such a cool show. I wish if they'd called me about a couple of weeks earlier and let me know, I would have done any kind of version they want because I like the show.
We're setting you up right now for the next trailer.
I love doing things for projects like that. I've had people ask me to write theme songs for television shows, and I've done. I got some. Somebody sent me, I didn't know this, but somebody sent me a plaque one year and it said, you had the most music in television and film, you know, in this past year or something. And I thought, how's that possible with all these big artists out there? And I guess I just do a lot of work And a lot of it gets into filmed. And I had, like, I think two TV shows running with theme songs. So those were on often. And then I had a lot of stuff. I get a lot of my music is used in film. And
well, you write a lot of evocative, timeless music. And your performances are timeless, too.
I don't know
too.
Why they use it in film, but I'm really glad they do. And I don't know, this doesn't quite make sense, but I'm a huge fan of film. And I'm a huge fan of old film. So whenever I write a song, there's always in my mind is a visual. I mean, I don't write without seeing a little movie in my head. And I go, maybe because I'm thinking that way visually when I'm writing, maybe it helps turn it around that they can use it to support a visual, you know?
You speaking of TV, you have done TV quite successfully. When we talked about you and Kenny, the comedic aspects, and then recently, I know you were talking about Gary Shandling and his passing.
Man, I love Gary Shandling. We can stop for a sidebar on that for a minute.
Sure.
That somebody told me that he passed away, and it's one of those things. We weren't best friends. We didn't call each other up and stuff. I met him in passing. You know, like you do in show business, you might do a show with somebody, but I did. I did the Gary Shandling show and his other, Larry Sanders show. And, he was just a really cool guy, really nice man. And I remember, thinking back of all the weird stuff, you go like, I don't remember so much what I did on the show. I couldn't tell you what song I sang or what I was wearing or anything like that. The one picture that's really clear in my mind is Gary saying to me, we were working, he says, "So Chris, you want to come have lunch with me?" And I thought, sure, like it's his show. He's asked me to have lunch. Maybe I should do that, Yes, sure, Gary, come on. We walk into his office, little office, not anything ostentatious. He sits down, I sit down. He opens a brown bag. He goes, "I got like this, a turkey, and I got this, another sandwich." I go, "Okay, I'll take either one. I get anything." And he has some fruit. And we sat down and we ate his sandwiches and split the fruit and we talked, and we did not talk about anything in show business. We didn't talk about like, how's your movie career? What's your new album? I was telling him I was working on, I got a 64 Chevy Nova and I was doing some work on it. It was going to be put in a museum or something. We talked about that. And I was talking about crab fishing in San Francisco, and just shooting the breeze.
Yeah, those are topics trending, those topics
but
right now.
He was just a really laid-back, really nice, smart guy. And when I heard that he went out, what I think is way too early for him, it was just, I went, he's going to be missed.
He is going to be missed. Having done comedic TV, you realize, there's an art form to comedy, too. It just isn't something that... Now, are gifted. You have the gift
to gab. When I did TV, I learned some things. I really did. When I did TV, I thought I was funnier than I was. And then I realized after I did TV, it brought me down a peg because I did the show, and then after the show, we would watch the show on our bus because, we go, well, let's see what we did. And the band was all in the show. And we watched the show, and I noticed that whenever I had a scene that was like, I would have these scenes where it was Chris has his romantic scene, right? I'm kissing the girl or something like that. Everybody would get up and make a sandwich, me included. Everybody, whenever it was my scene, that was like sandwich time or bathroom break. But when Kenny, my drummer, was on, everybody stayed tuned. He was hilarious. And I realized, Chris, nothing you can do about it. Kenny Johnson's funnier than you're ever going to be.
Well, I hope he hears that and takes it as the high praise it's meant to be. Do you want to do another live one, or do you want me to play one off the album? I can do whatever you want. It's your show right now.
I could. You play something off the album. What do you got?
Well, you know what? There's one off the album that no one can even dare touch, Roy Orbison. But you've talked about how this is one of your homages to Roy Orbison.
That means rip off in French.
Yeah, well, that rip off. I would have said it, but
I love Roy. He was, and man, talk about, how old Roy was when he passed away? 52.
What? Really?
Yeah, I know because at the time I was young enough that I thought, well, he lived a pretty full life. 52.
I had no
idea.
He
was a kid. And but he just had done so much, it made it seem like he'd been around forever because, you know, he went from Sun Studios to like the Beatles and to modern times. And you just, I went, how did he go out so soon? He's somebody I got to work with and hang with him. The nicest guy I ever met in show business. I always say Roy Orbison was, try to make it short, but I opened for him. And I didn't have any hits. I wasn't anything. I was nobody. I was just like a local artist opening for Roy Orbison. My parents and everybody goes, can we get tickets to see you play? I knew what they wanted. They all wanted to see Roy Orbison. Roy Orbison met my parents. I mean, he didn't have to meet them. They were the opening artist's parents. And, you know, like he's tired on the road. He hung with my parents for like an hour and a half back, you know, before the show. Really nice guy. And then after the show, my older brother, Nick, Roy was there and he was big. He was like legendary comeback at the time. He was hot. And the local newspapers all came. They go, Roy, can we get a shot of you? And he goes to his assistant. He goes, somebody go get Chris Isaak. Well, they went and got me. And then Roy put his arm around me and held me next to him. And he goes, all right, let's take a picture. And I could see in the newspaper guy's eyes, we don't want a picture of that guy with Roy. But they took a bunch of pictures and they said, how about one with you alone, Roy? And he goes, well, I'm tired. Good night. The next day in the paper, it was Roy Orbison and Chris Isaak. They had to put my name in the paper. He knew exactly what he was doing.
That's great.
And I went, I never forgot it. I went like, what a guy, you know?
Well, you pay due respect to the great Roy Orbison, as only you can do. We're going to play one off the album, First Comes the Night. We're here live at Westfield Topanga at the Village in Studio V with Chris Isaak, and this is from his album, First Comes the Night. It's Reverie.
Wish I could be like you and have a heart that can't be broken. Where do you go when it's over? When the reverie goes up in flames, there's no such thing as tomorrow. When you love me, then leave me this way.
It's Chris Isaak from the album First Comes the Night. The fans outside are applauding. It's 88.5 KCSN, and we're talking about TV. And you spent a good chunk of last year doing TV on The X Factor in Australia. How did that come about?
I've been asked to do things like, you know, American Idol or those kind of shows have talked to me before and said maybe I'd be somebody to have on, I guess because I own a suit and I show up.
A couple of suits.
Yeah, I own a couple of suits and I show up and they thought, he's got a suit. He's halfway there. But part of me always went, you know, I hate those kind of shows. The singers are not real. This is TV baloney. And it was an attitude that I had that just kind of said, well, I came out of bars and clubs. And, you know, John Lennon came out of bars and clubs. And my heroes came out of bars and clubs. And that's where you got to start. And then I went to do this thing, The X Factor. And I kind of did it with the attitude going in. I thought, well, I bet it's going to be, you know, fairly restricted, you know, to like pop-ish young people with pretty faces. And I'm probably not going to like that a lot, but it'll be good for me. I'll be on TV, and that's good for me. So I'm going to do the. Man, I went through changes. I went over there, and right away, they have a lot of people that are auditioning that are ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, you have hilarious people that can't sing. And then you get somebody who can sing who comes up, and you go, oh, my God, this guy's, like, really good. Like, I got to work with some singers that were really good. One of the guys that I work with, a guy named Big T, and he's a great big guy. He looked kind of rough. He was working on a railroad. He'd never been in a band.
All the Live Long Day?
Yeah, All the Live Long Day, exactly. Working on a railroad, and just like, he looked like a big truck driver who'd never been in a band, never did anything. He goes, well, I sang for my mates. And they said, have you got what it takes to be on The X Factor? He goes, yeah, well, we'll soon find out, won't we? And I go, I love this guy. Who is this guy? And we became, you know, like became, I'm supposed to be his mentor, but I think we became friends. And it was, I just had a ball on the show. I work with these guys, and I didn't know, like, am I going to be a good guy to coach anybody? I don't know. I never coached anybody. I don't have kids. I don't know about mentoring anybody. And in the end, you couldn't have found somebody who was more into it than me. Everybody else on the show, they were into it, but I think I was the guy who was like, I wanted to get there early and stay late, you know?
Well, see, it's like that book of lyrics where you thought you had it.
Yeah.
And then that's the one thing I think by now, Chris, you and I both realize, we know only a little.
Yeah.
We thought we knew it all when we were 20, and now we figure, I don't think I know anything.
I learned a lot on that show. I mean, I didn't know Beyonce from Ed Sheeran, I didn't know. You know what I mean? Bruno Mars, I didn't know. What? Then you start listening to these things, you go, that's a great song, or this is a great Adele piece, or you start to hear what's on pop radio now, and there's a lot of great stuff. What was fun is I learned that stuff, and then I'd be talking to them, and I'd go, do you know this Louvin Brothers song? And they go, who are the Louvin Brothers? Well, they're like precursors, you know, before the Everly Brothers, there was Louvin Brothers, and you know, like you start talking to them about stuff that they don't know. It was a lot of fun.
And you got to spend probably the most time in one place. Was it 4 months you spent in Sydney?
Yeah, pretty much. And that doesn't sound like much to most people, but, you know, my life is usually I'm in town for one day at a time. You know, you're in Salt Lake City.
Sometimes it's all day.
Yeah, you go in Salt Lake City, you come in at 4 a.m, unpack your bag, you wake up the next morning, whatever, and you maybe go to the gym, and then I go down to the show, do the show, and climb on the bus and drive to the next city. So
you go to the gym.
Yeah.
When I go into a town,
I know I'm the only guy who goes to the gym.
I go to the hotel and I pass out.
Everybody else hits the bar or the mini bar. I hit the gym. But you know, to be like 3 days in a town, if you're 3 days in one town, you're like, oh my gosh, we're really settling down. You know?
Yeah. I get to go outside.
Yeah, to be there for months at a time in one city, it was fantastic. I walked everywhere you could walk in Sydney. I mean, I knew Chinatown. I went to every shop. I knew all the shoe repair places. I knew everybody.
And they know you.
Yeah, they do.
Because you were on the telly, mate.
I'm on the television a lot over there. It's funny because my music, you won't have kids come up to me like, you know, 9-year-olds or 8-year-olds come up, they don't go, you know, hey, are you the guy who played Wicked Game? That doesn't happen. But when I was on television every day for, you know, 4 hours or something, you're walking down the street and little kids go to their parents, I see them tug their hand and go, that's the guy on TV.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's me. I'm the guy on TV.
Well, you know, there's just another facet of life as Chris Isaak.
Can't get by with anything.
You just keep racking up the areas of expertise. I see you got a guitar in your hand. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. You've already played a song in it. Do you have another one?
Sure.
Are you capable, Chris, of on the spot without really having any preparation? Are you capable of performing another song live for the audience of KCSN? I believe he can.
Can I play one? This is not radio friendly particularly, but I like the lyrics of it.
As long as the FCC doesn't take my license.
If somebody's got somebody that they broke up with, this is a good breakup song. There was a time when I believed in everything you said to me, but now it's best that I should see the way things really are. Here's the lyrics I like. A broken heart, some photographs, this canceled check, a couple laughs. It somehow seemed much more, but that's the way things really are. I thought you said love goes on and on and on, and I thought you loved me too, didn't you? We had a love but lost our way. I guess there isn't much to say. And I can see by light of day the way things really are.
You know what? See, the crowd loves it too. That was actually quite beautiful.
You bring a tear to a glass eye.
Well, and the cancel checks part, I was like,
I like that. You know, like, I don't think there's been in a song before, and I don't know exactly what it means, but it means that at some point there was a little more involved in this relationship than love.
Yeah.
You know, a broken heart. Some photographs, a canceled check.
Yeah.
That makes a picture.
Yeah, it hit me. It hit me hard, right in the pocket, too. I have to play one. Speaking of your improvisational skills, I think it was 2 times ago when you came on the air with us that on the spot, we were discussing the fact that I needed to jazz up my show somehow. It needed a little more pizzazz. And you thought, well, what's better than having your own show's theme song? And you did create a theme song for Sky Daniels on KCSN. So we're going to share that with you and remind everyone real quickly.
Let's hear it.
It's not bad, I got to tell you. For a one take, it's pretty good. But you be the judge of it, Chris. This is a song that Chris performed for us on the spot, much like you're seeing him do live here at 88.5 KCSN at the Westfield. And here we go. See if you remember it.
Yeah, rocking with Sky.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, rocking with Sky. He wakes up in the morning, he don't comb his hair. Oh yeah, rocking with Sky. He's a modulating papa, he's everywhere. Yeah, rocking with Sky. I love that song. Yeah, rocking with Sky. Tune, children. Yeah, rocking with Sky. Here comes the hits. Yeah, yeah, rocking with Sky.
Not bad.
I like it. Had you modulating on there.
Not bad. That's yeah, good. Modulating. See, that's a guy who knows radio. Everybody could come up and modulate.
You know, Kenny Johnson, who's singing on there with me, my drummer, Kenny was a radio disc jockey.
I did not know that.
And he was in Texas. And I said, well, Kenny and I, we know everything about each other. And at one point he goes, I had to pass my engineering license to get it. I go, what do you mean? He says, well, in the day, in the old day of radio.
The FCC third.
You have to have an engineering license to do it. And he had his license.
I've got my third.
And I'll tell you something else. Kenny's not here today, so I can talk about him freely.
Sure. You could if he was here.
Kenny, this is true. We've been together like 30 years. We've been together. And we're traveling on the bus at like 4 a.m, and we're sitting up in the front lounge talking. And two guys just sitting there talking who've known each other 30 years, and there's a pause, and we're watching in the background on TV is a Fred Astaire movie. And we're watching, I love Fred Astaire. I just think he's got such class, and he's so different than
he's
me.
He's a bon vivant.
And Kenny couldn't be more different than Kenny and I, who are a couple of rednecks. Here's this classy Fred Astaire in a tuxedo dancing like he's on air. Kenny turns to me and pauses, and he goes, you know, I tap dance. I said, well, what? What? You what? He goes, I tap dance.
That's a big confession.
I said, you're telling me you took tap dance lessons and you know how to tap dance? He goes, yep. And I said, well, Kenny, since we're being honest with each other, I took tap dance lessons too, and I never told anybody. And I said, I used to wax the floor in Stockton at this tap dance studio, and they'd give me a free tap dance lessons if I would wax the floor on the weekend. So I come in with a big thing and wax the floors down, and this guy named Bill Jacoby, star of stage, screen, and television, also available for children's parties and bar mitzvahs, he would teach me tap dance, and I still had tap dance shoes in my closet. I said, don't tell anybody. It'll be our secret, Ken. Well, but now it's out of the bag.
Yeah, and guess what? The next time you come by the station with Kenny, tap dancing is going to be part of the repertoire. Make sure you remind me this, because this cannot be missed. We are going to film some tap dancing, and I want to see if you guys in the multitasking can sing and tap dance at the same time.
Sing and tap. Yeah. Could be.
You want to hear another one off the album?
Sure.
We'll play one off the album. First Comes the Night is the record from Chris Isaak. We're going to play this one, and we'll come back, and we'll do a little more with Chris Isaak live on 88.5 KCSN. If you guys would applaud out there, we'd appreciate it. Thank you. That's very nice of you. Chris Isaak, ladies and gentlemen, on KCSN.
I don't want your sympathy. I don't care what's wrong with me.
88.5 KCSN. And that is music from Chris Isaak's new album entitled First Comes the Night. Now, you worked in Los Angeles, as is your wont to do often, on this album. And on that particular song, you worked with Dave Cobb, right?
I think so. I think that was Paul Worley, Worley, yeah. Paul Worley and Dave Cobb are both out of Nashville. Paul Worley is probably best known for Lady Antebellum, but
right.
he's worked with so many people that it'll spin my head. I mean,
right.
he starts talking and I go, you know, he can go back to the guys in the 50s that you know, guys that you go like, who are these guys? He must have been a child.
Pre-Leuven Brothers?
I don't know if he, you know, at some point, Paul's probably worked with just about anybody you can name. Who did Big Rock Candy Mountain, the big folk singer? Burl Ives.
Right.
We're talking one day, and Paul goes, yeah, I recorded Burl Ives. I went, whoa, stop there. You recorded Burl Ives? I go, I love Burl Ives. Let me hear Burl Ives stories.
Best goatee ever, don't you
think?
Yeah,
you know, that's one of the cool things about show business is I'm a huge fan of all these, you know, the people that you... I mean, I get to work with Johnny Cash. I got to work with Jerry Lee Lewis. I got to meet Carl Perkins and you know, hang out with Orbison and stuff. And you go, did you do this? People always go, the joke is, you know, oh, you do this for the girls or something. I go, I wanted to meet all those people on the records that I got. You know, like I'm just like everybody else. You go like, who are these people? Where do they come from? What's their real story? And it's fascinating.
I have to do an aside on The Killer on Jerry Lee. So I forget when it was, mid-80s or something, when the Palomino was still open.
Yeah.
He played there. And I went backstage at that point in time, and it was the first time I got to meet him. And he says, would you like to have a drink with The Killer? You know, third person, The Killer.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that's always a good sign you're off to a good start.
Right. And I go, well, yeah, sure. And so he pours me like a full glass of Jack Daniels. Now, the tap dance story, I'll confess my response to The Killer as he's giving me the look, like, take this glass of Jack Daniels was, oh, swear to you, these are the first words out of my mouth. Oh, I don't drink dark spirits. Now, I don't know where the hell that line came from.
I don't drink dark spirits.
I don't know where the hell that line came from.
Here's a glass of gin.
I was a vodka or a gin guy, right. And for somehow, Chris, you know The Killer.
Yeah.
Imagine the look I got back I gave him I don't drink dark spirits. Yeah. He gave me a look that Travis Bickle couldn't throw at me. I went, but I am now.
He became obdurate and intransigent.
Yeah. Huh. He was whatever those adjectives mean, he was that and more. Whew, I was scared.
I saw him, true story, I saw Jerry Lee. I love Jerry Lee. Let me start by saying, if you gave me my choice of anybody in the world, like just I could listen to them just sit in a room and play play whatever they want. If I could hear Jerry Lee just sitting in his living room playing piano for an hour and singing whatever he wants, I mean, that'd be my treat, because he is genius. Everything he does, I just go, I love you, man. You're just anything. He makes it his own. But I saw him play in San Francisco, and it was a little kind of a club situation.
Right.
And there was a bunch of punks. I was up in the front, and a bunch of punks came, and they were like trying their leather jackets and stuff. They were going to come to the front and kind of shove up in the front. Well, they got up there pretty close, and I was thinking, you know, you don't shove in front of me, but okay, whatever. When Jerry came out, he'd had a few, I think, that night. And he walked to the front of the stage and just stared, just stood there and stared into these guys' face like, don't you dare think of giving me trouble. And he stared them down.
Son.
He stared them down to the point where they looked like at first, like, because everybody in the crowd was kind of backing away from them, like, oh, they're guys, they have leather jackets.
They're going to be troublemakers.
They have safety pins. I'm looking at them like, you know, just stay out of my way, we'll be fine. He came out. Everybody in that crowd stood back 4 feet. They all just went, oh, I don't want to deal with him.
No.
And I was laughing. I'm going, this is hilarious. Like, he just had the power of the jungle, man.
Yeah, he had those eyes. Those eyes could definitely spook you, to say the least.
I played with him. You know, we did like Last Man Standing or something. I had to go in, and they said, well, Jerry's tired. And we were supposed to go in and rehearse. And he goes, let's not rehearse. Let's just do the first one, record it, and film it live. And I went, okay.
Hey, wing it.
Somewhere over the rainbow. Wham, in the can, done.
That's a good take. Thank you, yeah, Chris.
That was it.
You did work, if I'm remembering correctly, you worked on the album here in Nashville.
Nashville.
But you hadn't really, as much as you have a deep appreciation for country music and everything, you hadn't really worked in Nashville much, had you?
You know,
in terms of recording.
I've been to Nashville, but I never recorded there. And I was scared when I went to Nashville. I thought, and this is stupid, but you know, I didn't know any better. I just thought, maybe they're going to think I'm not country enough. I don't, because these aren't particularly country songs. It's a rock and roll record. I thought, maybe they're not going to think these are country enough. I had a couple that had that feel, but I don't know if they're going to think I blend in or I fit in or whatever, and I was worried about it. Well, these producers are both, they could produce anything, and it had nothing to do with that. But the first day I was there, I bumped into at breakfast Robert Plant. And
Doesn't everybody?
Yeah, I wish. I don't meet him often, but I had met him before, and he remembered me and said, hey, Chris, come over. And we were just sitting at a little table and having breakfast together and talking a little bit. And he said, we should get together for dinner. And he was really friendly. And I thought, well, maybe he really means it. So I went over and I got a piece of paper and I wrote down my number. I said, here, Robert, call me if you want to have dinner. You know, thank you. He called me. Let's have dinner. We went out and had dinner. We talked till like they shut the place down, you know, like, you know, Hector's got to go home now. He's got a baby. You know, like, that was it. The end of the night, we walked. And even then, he goes, let's walk back to the hotel. And we talked some more on the way back to the hotel. And I, just funny, smart guy. And I thought, as I'm getting into the elevator, I thought, yes, Robert Plant's better looking than I'm ever going to be. And yes, he's got a better voice and more talent than I do. But we're both recording in Nashville. And I thought, I'm on the right place, you know.
Well, and talk about another guy who has a love of all kinds of music and all eras of music. He's an encyclopedia.
Really, he does. He knows old stuff. I mean, you know, you read about Lead Belly. You know that.
Yeah.
Folk singer, you know. Lead Belly, if people don't know, is like things like, you know, oh, Lord, pick a bale of cotton. Oh, Lord, pick a bale of hay. Oh, Lord, pick a bale of cotton. Oh, Lord, pick a bale of hay. Ain't got many that can pick a bale of cotton. Ain't got many that can pick a bale of hay. Ain't got many that can pick a bale of cotton. I can pick a bale of hay. Oh. How many people know that stuff? Nobody. Robert Plant does. And so I'm sitting with him, and I'm going like, you and I are like the two Star Trek guys who meet at school who goes, yes, but on episode 4, do you remember? You know what I mean? You go like, he and I are sitting together and I go, we just hit it off. It's like, we both know that stuff that you go, yeah, I listened to those records till I wore them out, you know?
Well, you certainly bring your own, I know you're self-deprecating, but your own talent is immense. Can you do one more live before we wrap it up in the hour? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Give me a warning. Or at least give our audience a warning.
Let me do something, a little bit of this one people remember. The world was on fire, no one could save me but you. Strange what desire will make foolish lovers do. I never dreamed that I'd meet somebody like you. I never dreamed that I'd love somebody like you. No, I don't want to fall in love. No, game to play. Let me feel this way. What a wicked thing to do. Make me dream of you. What a wicked thing to say. You never felt this way.
What a wicked thing to do. Let me dream of you. No, I don't wanna fall in love. No, I don't wanna fall in love with you. See, on the original record, they cut Sky out.
I know,
I don't
man.
Know why.
Well, you know, it was our secret. Yeah. So, well, God bless you. Listen, coming in and having you here is always a pleasure. You never disappoint.
What a fun day, man.
We have fun, right? And we got to hang with Cheap Trick.
Sky, Cheap Trick. It's just fun talking music with people who like music.
Yeah, well, we're here. Know? We're here, and they're out there. That's
we're like
for sure.
The kids in the lunchroom talking about Star Trek over in the corner.
Or down in the basement. You got the Jimi Hendrix, and I've got the Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and we're going to, you know, exchange records. You remember those days, Chris.
I'm still living them.
Back when we had basements.
Still living them. I got a basement. Yeah.
You have a basement? Yeah. I don't. Not here in California.
I spend most of my time, and I have a basement. It's got a heated floor. The best thing I ever did. And in the basement, I got my washer and my dryer. And I'll do my laundry, and I sit down there, and I play guitar in the basement. And people go, that's the worst room in your house. I go, that's where I spend all my time.
It's like, man,
playing guitar in the basement.
I'm envious. You got a basement with a heated floor?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That's
ain't life good?
That's a rock star for you, a guy who's got a basement with a heated floor.
And living good, man. Eating double layer sardines.
You're living the dream,
Chris. Single layer, that's not good enough for me. I'm a rock star.
Yeah, man, you got to have it all and then some. Well, it's Chris Isaak. It's been live on 88.5 KCSN. Buddy, as always, thanks.
Thank you.